Okay, thank you. So I will present a work done in collaboration with Javier Mas and Alexander Cervantes in Santiago de Compostela in Spain, and Javier Abajo and Emilia da Silva in Madrid. So our aim is to study the holographic representation of quantum quenches in finite size setups. So I will start with some motivation. So over the last years, it has been possible to realize isolated quantum systems in the laboratory using cold atom systems, and this has attracted a lot of interest in studying the out-of-equilibrium dynamics. So if we have a macroscopic system on general grounds, we will expect a fast approach to stationary state. And we will also expect that if we look at any subsystem of the system, that it will appear as in thermal equilibrium. So we will expect that this stationary state, it looks like thermal equilibrium. However, this general expectation is not always realized. A clear case are integrable systems. So this final stationary state doesn't need, is generally not thermal equilibrium. And even some systems that are, where they have some small breaking of integrability, they show a long-lived quasi-stable, quasi-stationary state that is far from thermal and only evolve to a thermal equilibrium over much longer time scales. Now, in addition, if the system takes, doesn't approach a stationary state in a short time, and the system is placed in finite size, we can expect to see revivals of the initial states, of the initial state. So this has been studied the last year by Tardy, who has shown that in general, revivals of the initial state is happening in rational conformal field theories on a zircon. Well, there are also other studies of this. So the question we want to ask is if the holographic techniques, they can be also a useful tool to study these not generic situations, given that in general to analyze the out of equilibrium dynamics is a difficult problem. So holography could help. So in particular in this talk, we are going to be interested in this item, how to represent revivals in holographically. This is going to be our aim. So I will start with a brief review of holographic quenches, starting with the situation in which our system is infinite size. So what is understood usually as a quantum quench is that we have the system in the ground state of a certain Hamiltonian, and suddenly at time equals zero, let's say, we change one of the parameters of the Hamiltonian. So the initial state that was the ground that usually is taken to be the ground state of this system, it becomes a very excited state for this second Hamiltonian, and it triggers the time evolution. So here I have represented that this injection of energy that is materialized by the quench generates quasi-particles in the system, and they typically they are going to be entangled over short scales. In general, this ground state can be considered, for example, to be gap, and the entanglement will be only on regions of the correlation length of the initial Hamiltonian, and typically, just by pure propagation, the typical distance of entanglement will start increasing. So entangled excitations will start drifting away. So this is what is understood usually by quantum quench. So what is the holographic representation? Or at least what we can model holographically in an easy way. So we can consider we have our initial state is going to be the ground state of a conformal field theory. Now, at t equals zero, it's not that we change a parameter of the Hamiltonian. So our initial Hamiltonian at the volume Hamiltonian for us is going to be the same. So the thing what we can do is to inject some energy into the system. For example, we can imagine that we have switching on and off a coupling. So holographically, this is represented by the appearance of a matter cell entering into the ABS space from the boundary at t equals zero. And the mass of the cell is going to be, essentially is going to be the quench energy. So, so and then after this has happened, the cell will start, will follow the gravitational dynamics and will tend to form a black hole. And this dynamical process should be the holographic representation of the field theory evolving towards equilibrium. So, and by the holographic dictionary, the temperature of the final temperature of the field theory will be the temperature of the black hole that has formed. So, now a question that is especially in these dynamical setups is not evident a priori is how to calculate, how to extract the information that is going to determine the field theory evolution from the gravitational background. So the object that we are going to use is the entanglement entropy, and in particular we are going to look to the entanglement entropy of a single interval. Due to the HRT prescription, we can calculate the entanglement entropy in a covariant way, so it's very well determined how to do in the holographic setup. So here I have plotted what you will expect from the entanglement entropy evolution in a quench, an ordinary quench, from a gap to a gapless system that is ascending at work by Carpi and Calabresi in 2005. So what you see, these different lines represent intervals of different sizes, and what you see is that there is a period of linear increase and then a saturation. In several talks, we have heard about that. So this situation of saturation corresponds, if we will, a simplistic but a picture that is very useful, at least having in mind an image for the evolution of entanglement entropy of a single interval, is to imagine that the entangled excitation, they drift away, they separate at a constant speed and without interaction. So we have seen in previous talks that this is not a good model for example, the evolution of mutual information, but for a single interval is useful, and I will use it along the talk. So what we will see is that here is that when the entanglement excitation has separated farther than the size of the interval, there are not entangled excitations inside the interval, and the rest of the system acts as a thermal bath for the interval. So we get an entanglement entropy that is extensive, it's proportional to the size of the interval, and it doesn't change with time. So how we represent that, how the holographic setup represents. So as the cell falls, the geometry outside the cell is a black hole and inside is a DS. So this comes from here, we have to calculate the length of geodesics for getting the entanglement entropy. For geodesics, they just live in the black hole part of the background. This situation here in which the cell still hasn't formed a horizon will correspond to this initial part of the evolution. And this situation here, that clearly we see that the length of the curve is proportional to the size of the interval, will give this part here, this behavior. So, more interesting is the situation of growth. This is when the entangled excitations, they have not separated farther than the size of the interval. So then the number of pairs that can contribute to the entanglement entropy of a single interval is proportional to 2t, to the separation they have, this part here that has been shaded. So what is interesting is the way to represent this situation holographically. So if the cell has not still fall behind its horizon, so this is represented by geodesics that they just, they cross the cell. So again, this corresponds to this part here. What happens when the cell has already, is behind already the horizon? So this regime here corresponds to the geodesics that traverse the horizons and traverse the cell. So contrary to what happens in static backgrounds, in dynamical backgrounds, the geodesics that calculate entanglement entropy, they do get behind the horizon. And this is actually a very important fact, because this is the way holography has to represent the fact that still there is entanglement. This interval has entanglement. Entanglement comes from this part here, but it passes by this part that is the black hole that essentially is measuring the separation. It's giving you the contribution from the how much the pairs have separated. So I have explained before this situation because I want to really make a strengthen this statement here that the selling fault it represents the drift away of entanglement excitation. And because I want to stress this, because the radial direction in this setup is representing real space entanglement. So the radial direction is not a direction of energy. Like, for example, we could have thought that the traveling of the cell along the radial direction can represent the spectral variation, spectral decomposition, or spectral evolution of the state of the system. But what I'm trying to say here is that at least in this process, the radial direction is what is telling for us is telling about the typical scale of entangled excitation, the typical separation of entangled excitations. So if this is the situation I have considered until now, we have in the boundary, we have a conformal field theory living in Minkowski space. Then we have the cell falling, and a black hole always forms. Why? Because we have a conformal field theory. Here we have just one scale, that is the mass of the cell. This can always be normalized to one. And then we always have the same behavior, that is a black hole form. Now, a different situation happens when we consider the field theory living on an sphere. This is also a setup that can be very easily implemented in ADS. So this is ADS in Poincaré coordinates, this is ADS in global coordinates. So in this case, we have again a cell of mass M imploding, but we have another scale that is the radius of our boundary sphere. So, and then we can have a richer phenomenology since we have a dimensionless number that we can construct. And indeed, there is a richer phenomenology. So what we will be considering in the following is is the collapse of a spherical cell. So if we look to asymptotically flat space-time, what we obtain, so this was studied by Chokdui back in 93, using a cell composed of a massless scalar. And so for sufficiently massive cells, of course it will collapse and it will form a black hole. However, if the mass of the cell is below a certain threshold, then there will be not enough concentration of matter at the moment of maximal implosion, and it will scatter back and it will escape to infinity. So this is the situation in flat space-time. However, in asymptotically ADS, the situation is different because ADS has a reflecting boundary, and in addition, a cell, the massless scalar, can travel back and forth in ADS in a finite time. So what happens is that even if the cell doesn't have enough mass to form a black hole at the first infall, it will escape to infinity, will attain the boundary in a finite time, will reflect, and will collapse again. And it will bound several times. And what Bisson and Rostorovsky saw is that very generically, this for a big variety of pulses, especially narrow pulses, after enough bounces, a black hole will form. So in what situations we will have bounces or we will not have bounces? So again, this is our So It will depend on the product of the mass cell, the cell mass times the boundary radius. So in general, when this quantity is bigger than 1 over g, the Newton constant, a horizon will form at the first infall. This is to say, for example, that what will be that large black holes will form, will not need bounces to be formed in ADS. And this is, of course, always the situation in Minkowski because the boundary size is infinite. However, when the cell, the mass cell is small compared to the boundary size, we are going to have very generically the collapse process or the formation of a black hole requires some bounces of the boundary. So the question is, what is the field theory meaning of that? So let's return again to the image, to this simple propagation model for the quench. We said that at some point we have here a very excited state, and this materializes in the formation of quasi-particle pairs. Let's say this is a very simplistic picture, but let's imagine it like that, that they start separating, drifting away. So now if we are in a compact space, like on a cycle, excitations flying apart, they will reunite again. So if L is the perimeter of the cycle and B is the propagation velocity, so we will have that after the time T0 given by L divided by 2B, the initial state is reproduced again. So for the case we are going to be interested, that is a conformative theory, B is equal 1, we are going to have always the boundary, the radius of the boundary space to be unity. So our propagation time is going to should be pi. So for example, in a free system, you can see that this is the case, and in the quenches in rational field theories that were studied by Mr. Carey, this was also the time after which they were almost complete revivals of the initial state. So now, but let's look a bit more in detail. So the propagation model, as I said, is very useful to represent the spreading of quantum correlations, at least some situations that, when we want to look to entanglement entropy of a single interval. But in principle, it's not enough to characterize if there are going to be revivals or not. What will happen? So we have a quench, generated entanglement excitations are generated. Entanglement is going to be concentrated on short scales, and they start separating. So what happens after here? If the system recognizes that it's in a cycle, and the system rephases again or defaces, this is something that for which this propagation model cannot tell us anything, and it's going to depend in the interactions of our system. So we can have two situations. We can have, for example, that after the system, the excitation, they have separated, they have arrived to maximal separation, there will be irreversible defacing, and the system will appear as thermal, or at least in a stationary state. And it can be also, depending on the characteristics of the system, that the system rephases and the initial state is reconstructed. So in what situations we will expect this to be the case? So we will expect this to be the case, at least the system has a very strong symmetry, like indeed is the case of rational conformative theories or integral systems, for example. We will expect that if the energy is very big with respect to the size of the system, the energy times the size of the system is, or let's say, the energy per degree of freedom of the system is bigger with respect to 1 over the size of the system. So that will be like the first excitation, so that our state can cover many of the excited states, and these excited states, they don't have an equal spacing, so we'll expect irreversible defacing. However, if the Even in a generic system, if the energy per degrees of freedom is smaller than the energy set by the size of the system, we will expect that few levels are populated and that we may be able to see revivals. So this is actually the same that we have seen in the gravity dual, because 1 over d precisely measures the number of the degrees of freedom we have in the field theory. So we see that the first check to interpret the revivals, to interpret these bounces in these collapse processes as revivals in the field theory, it works.
You give me also ADS labels, give much ADS labels, so that 1 over d is a bit.
Yes. I put in the ADS radius to 1. Yes, of course. So let's go in more detail to the holographic setup. So we are using, as in the first paper of Chukwik and in many other papers that have studied this problem, we are using the simple case of the collapse of a massless scalar that has an spherical distribution that I have plotted here. So here, this shape represent the energy density of our poles, so something that integrated will give us the mass. You know, something that is terribly well defined or uniquely defined in gravity, but this thing we have chosen here, this function integrated gives the mass. So, and this is the radial direction. So we consider a cell that is located close to the ADS boundary and it falls towards the center. So the cell, so in principle we have to match every property of the poles with some characteristic of the quench. So the mass is going to map to the quench energy. So the other we are considering Gaussian packets, very simple packages. So the other property they have is the broadness. So the broadness is going to be related with the time span of the quench. Suppose we consider a quench that is not instantaneous but has a finite time span, so the cell thickness will be related with the time span of the quench. So to represent the sudden quench, we should concentrate mostly in thin cells. So here is just an example of an evolution with two bounces and collapse. So you see why this gravitational dynamics that was pointed out by Bisson and Rostorovsky of the focusing of part of the energy of the cell in shorter and shorter distances. You have seen the peak there in the second bounce. A peak develops very sharp, and this is the one that gives rise to the horizon. It's also another important property of these collapses is that not all the mass of the cell is swallowed by the emerging horizon. So still, it requires several more bounces to form the final black hole. So it's natural to think that a horizon, the appearance of a horizon, even if it's not swallowing the total mass of the cell, it represents the irreversible defacing of some degrees of freedom. The ones that are still travel back and forth, in principle, they can reface still. So here I have plotted the three-dimensional graph of the first bounce. So this is the boundary here, and this is the interior. So here we have the radial direction, and according to what I have said before of interpreting the radial direction and entanglement scale, so we see that this matches very well for interpreting these bounces as revivals. So we start here with entanglement mostly over short scales. They separate. This represents the fall of the cell till maximal implosion that will be associated to the maximal separation. If there is enough energy to form a horizon, it scatters back to infinity. That will represent this step from maximal separation to the entanglement being a state is again concentrated over short scales. And the revival time will be the time that it takes to complete this cycle. So if, let me see, if we go again here, this is the, Well, you see that the time it has taken, well, I stopped it a little after the bounce, but it's close to pi. So again, we get from this holographic setup that also the time span of the of these bounces, it has the right value to be interpreted as a revival.
Is it actually pi, or is there a time delay?
It's larger than pi. I will. That's going to be the aim of the talk. So I will tell more about that. So we have looked at this problem both in quenches in 2 plus 1 CFTs in 1 plus 1 CFT. So in a sphere, in a CFT living in a sphere, and a CFT living on a cycle. So let's start with the case of a CFT living on a sphere. So we are always, as I have said, considering radius 1 for the sphere. So the characteristics of collapse in ADS4 is that at least at the classical level, black holes of any mass can be formed. So, and the work of Bison and Rostorovsky tell us that thin cells, they are always going to collapse. So here, so we have investigated the phase diagram for collapse of this system with this type of very simple pulses that start localizes in the boundary, and they have this Gaussian shape. So this quantity here, M curly N, represents the energy density per species. This is the quantity that essentially have been talking before. So this is the phase diagram. We see that and this sigma is the thickness of the cell. So narrow cells are more or less up to 0.25, if they can be considered narrow cells. Afterwards, they are really quite broad cells. So these are the ones that can represent sudden quenches. So there is a well-defined region that determines where there is direct collapse, or here, there is, at least one bounce is required to form a black hole. So the interesting thing, or what we found interesting, is to calculate that the revival time in this for each of the for several broadness of the fixed broadness of the holes. So what we see is that when the mass is very small, always the revival time gets tends to pi. This is also to be expected because massless. If we are in the proof approximation, it takes a massless pulse to travel the whole ADS or they arrive to the center. Arrive to the center. It takes pi half. So to cross it, it takes pi. So this we reproduce this result, and we see that as we increase the mass of the cell increases, which means the quench energy increases. What we see, what the holographic representation is telling us, is that the revival time also increases. So these points, they represent that after if we increase the mass for a given broadness of the pulse, after some point we cross, we arrive the phase transition line, afterwards there are no more revivals, there is direct collapse. So this is the situation another important property is that for these quenches in 2 plus 1 dimensions, even if the period increases over pi, it always stays close to pi. So you see we cannot go here, we can go up to 4, but if we are in the realm of narrow quenches, we cannot go farther than here.
Is the revival time itself sharply defined if you have a broad pulse? Or?
Well, what we do is we look to one of the functions that define the geometry. This has like nice oscillations, and even if it's not so, there you can quite well identify the period of the oscillation. So, yeah, even if it's not terribly well defined, but yes, it can be.
But on this scale, it's well defined. I mean,
yes. Just by looking at the oscillation of this, I mean, the oscillations, they can be not so big, but you can locate what is it. So now if you look to, for instance, in 1+1 theory, so again the radius is equal to 1, there is already in the gravity side, there is a big difference because black holes can only form with this value, this curly n, above 1. Below 1, we only can have naked singularities. There are not black hole configurations, but naked singularities in these global coordinates. And it turns out that naked singularities, as it looks like, they do not form through collapse. So in these cases, for cells that have mass, well, this curly n smaller than 1, we will have oscillations. It looks that we are going to have oscillations forever. So again, we have looked at the phase diagram in this case. And the first thing, due to this condition that comes directly from the gravity representation, we are going to have revivals for much larger values in M than in ADS4. So in ADS4, we have only up to, instead of 1, up to 0.15, 0.1, 0.15. This was the maximal value of M for which we were seeing revivals. So here we can go up to much bigger values because of this constraint, this gap for the formation of black holes. And this has a big impact in the revival period. So here we have calculated the revival period along this line, sigma equal 25. So this is not very narrow, but a quite narrow cell. And you see that for small values of n, the same we had before, essentially the period is pi. But as we get close to 1, the period of the revival, it gets increases and actually it is compatible with even diverging, especially in this region here, that where still we found some revivals above n equal 1 in a small region.
In your previous example, do you see some quicker exponent?
We haven't looked to that. Probably you can see it, but we haven't. I mean, like here, it looks that, for example, there will be a nice function that reproduces it, but we didn't look to. Yes, it's something that we should check. So again, this is what I have said, that the revival time tends to pi for very small mass, but it gets very long, close to n equal 1.
But if you go, can you go back?
Yes.
If you go just above that, then you have a collapse. Does that collapse take a long time in some sense, or?
Well, the first, yes, I mean, it will have a tail where it's difficult to, if you identify collapse like a certain function of the metric is very close to forming an apparent horizon, that in the coordinates we never see the apparent horizon form. They are similar to the Schwarzschild coordinates.
Oh,
so this function, when it has a small value, it decreases very slowly. If we look to the entanglement entropy that I will show some graphs, then I think not really. So let's try to give an interpretation for the differences we found between the ADS3 and the ADS4 cases. Well, so if we have a large quench energy, we will expect a fast evolution towards equilibration and no revivals. This is actually what we saw in ADS4, because we saw that our revivals, they had a periodicity close to pi, which is something that is well described at this free propagation of excitation. So here I have I have plotted the entanglement, the evolution of entanglement entropy. These lines, they represent caps of spherical caps of ever larger size. To be this one here is almost a hemisphere, a bit less. And these dotted lines here, they represent the time at which we expect to see equilibration if we think in quasi-particles that are propagating just at the speed of light. So when the separation is bigger than the size of the caps, we will expect equilibration. So you see that this reproduces pretty well the behavior of the entanglement entropy. And what we see is that if we try to increase the mass, this will increase, as we have seen generically, increasing the mass increase the period. So the free propagation model starts to fail, and in that moment, for the ADS4 case, we have the fast equilibration sets in. So that this is rather what you will expect in a system that doesn't have a strong symmetry. Now, ADS3 case is different because it corresponds to a conformality theory in 1 plus 1. The conformal group has infinite generator in this case, has a strong symmetry constraint. And what we see there is that we can see revivals for much longer, much larger values of the mass. And there we can see this effect being very large, the revival time being much larger than this. Well, as I have mentioned before, this is the growth, the monotonical growth of the revival time with the mass points to being, well, as I have said before, an interaction, cosine interaction. So we get a nice picture that when the system has more symmetry, we can have revivals for larger energies. We see this, we can see this deviation being larger, while in ADS4, very soon we see fast equilibration setting in. So now the interpretation for the case of ADS3. So we see that contrary to what happens in the ADS4 case, two time scales emerge with the mass is close to this threshold one. So one is the collapse time, the time at which the entanglement entropy, for example, this observable entanglement entropy, that is the one we can calculate, it appears is attain its thermal values, and the one at which and the periodicity of the revivals. So in the ADS4 case, essentially TR is twice this TC, and we cannot play too much with that. But in the ADS3 case, we can go to a regime, this one, in which these two scales, they are pretty unconnected. So, and what we see also here are these dotted lines that have the same interpretation as before. This will be the equilibration time following this propagation model. So we see that in these regions here, the ones that are shaded in pink, the free streaming model works. While there is here a long plateau in which the system appears to be dephased, although afterwards it rephases again. So the gravity counterpart of this is that we have so the fall of the cell, the collapse of the cell, the time it travels from the boundary to the origin and from the maximal implosion and from maximal implosion to the boundary is always, even if the cell is close to n equal 1, it proceeds with the same speed, essentially. But what happens in the case of cells with big mass is that the cell stays a long time at the point of maximal implosion. And this is what gives these plateaus here. It stays there for quite a while, and then once it decides to really start traveling to the boundary, it does it at the same speed as a pulse that has less mass, as a less massive pulse.
This value of this plateau region is proportional to the size of the system?
No. So this collapse time is the one that is proportional to the system. A revival time equal to pi is proportional to the size of the system because we have taken our system to have radius 1. So that will be this will be the free the. So these are the oscillations that are proportional to the size of the system. So the entanglement entropy grows, and then so the one of the hemisphere attains a maximum and immediately decreases. And here we have our period, you see, being essentially pi. But in the case of ADS3, we can have these very long plateaus due to the fact that the pulse the cell remains a long time at the point of maximal implosion. And then we can have these two disconnected time scales. This one is always linked to, in our models, linked to the size of the system. It's L quarters in our case. Because our circle has length 2 pi. And this one is an effect due to interaction that in this regime is disconnected from each other. It can be much larger. So that's precisely the point I want to stress. This is the phenomenology that we find. So let me just finish with this transparency. So one can calculate the evolution of entanglement entropy along many cycles. This is a pulse that has m practically 1. And you see that it can happen that the time the system stays at these plateaus, it can vary a bit. But let's say these intervals in which the entanglement entropy really varies from the maximum to the minimum and back essentially keeps always being pi. So now I want to just point out that such a behavior is seen in some, well, an analogous behavior, let's say, in some system in dense matter called atoms setups. So one thing people has looked at is the behavior of a condensate of atoms in an optical trap with repulsive interactions. Then this is one of the samples. In the other is this is a mass a system that has been considered since a long time. This is a two-level atom compared to radiation in a cavity. So in both cases, let's start the system in a coherent state with an average number n. For this case, n is the number of atoms, the average number of atoms. Here, n is the average number of photons in the radiation to which the atom is coupled to. So in this case, this system shows collapse and revivals. If we measure the average phase coherence of the condensate, we see this behavior here. So we start with a coherent state. So this phase coherence goes to zero. And then after some time, it grows again to one. We have this revival. So this system has a very simple Hamiltonian. And it's such that in this case, the revival time is fixed by interaction. This lambda parameter is interaction. But we see here that here is the collapse time, the one that gets shorter and shorter if we increase the average occupation of the our coherent state. Mm-hmm. Of course, there are more revivals. I have just plotted the first cycle. And here in this case, what I have plotted here is the probability of the atom starts in the excited of the two levels, starting in the one with higher energy, in the excited one. And here I have plotted the probability to find the atom in the excited state minus the probability to find it in the ground state. So it starts in one, has some oscillation, and here for an occupation number 900 of the radiation to which it couples in the cavity. So it goes to zero, so this is an equal occupation for the two states, and again here we see a revival. So, and the interesting thing is that in this case, it is the collapse time, the one that is fixed with the interaction, that is then even more similar to the one we have in which our collapse system was always fixed. And the revival is the one that varies. But in these both cases, it can be derived that the quotient between the revival and the collapse time, it grows with the square root of the average number, which we can identify with the quench energy in our case. So we see that both the fact of having collapse and revivals and the behavior that the revival time with respect to the collapse time increases with the energy of the initial state is something that is seen has been seen in some condensed matter setups. So of course it will be great to see if such a behavior is also found in some systems, not with holographic techniques, but with usual field theory techniques, in some systems that are more similar to our finite size setup. So I finish here. The time, so I just pass it to Tadashi.
Yeah? Yeah, maybe a quick question while Tadashi sets up. Anything urgent?
Based on Tom's talk, can you connect with that, Tom Hartman's? So Tom Hartman contrasted, for example, CFT with small central charge and larger central charge. Do you have anything any similar comments? Like,
can you repeat the question?
There's a talk by Tom Hartman,
yeah,
where he discussed the differences between, say, central yeah. charge, less than some critical, and bigger. So, do you have any?
Well, I think I will think with regard to the what I have explained. I think that this increase of the period with the quench energy or with the energy of the initial state, okay. that this should be generic for all systems of all seas, but maybe this very nice collapse and revivals, this will be something that probably only happens for large sea. So it will be very nice that...
large, you mean infinite, yeah, but, or do you mean large compared to some critical?
This I don't know. Uh-huh. This I cannot say, but I will expect that if you decrease sea, these very nice plateaus, probably they don't show up. This is just an expectation. It would be very nice that this is done with other methods and to see this.